This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Another beautiful spring morning, kind of chilly. I took Teddy the puppy out for a walk early this morning before I left. And it was a little bit chilly. The wind's not blowing, so it's not as bad. 50 degrees right now, going up today eventually to 74, then 76 tomorrow, 80 Thursday, 81 Friday. But then comes, and dry. But then comes Saturday, maybe some severe weather. Peyton Malone's not sure on the timing of that. But then Sunday looks just sparkling for the parades that are scheduled. And Metairie got Argus following. The trucks are leading the St. Patrick's Day Parade. Or I forgot exactly what the order is, but Sunday, right. As I said, it was going to be nice Sunday, but I forgot the order. Either way, get out on Metairie Road and you'll have a lot of parade going on. And the weather's nice all the way into early next week. Things were not so nice yesterday on Wall Street. Mark Hamrick joins us now, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. How you doing, Mark?
Doing well, sir. Good morning. Thank you.
I can imagine, Mark, that there are people that are saying, there you go, President Trump tanking the economy with tariffs, just like I said he was going to do. And there are those that are saying, no, President Trump's playing the long game for the country. And although there's going to be some pain, as he said, there's going to be the good result for the country at the end. And then there are also those that are saying, hey, it's a market. It goes up, it goes down. These are buying opportunities. I just said a lot. Mark, you're the Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. Jump in where you feel comfortable.
Well, I'd probably split in somewhere in the center of all those things. Mm-hmm. Listen, what
well,
the
they
president
were the extremes,
is doing,
to be fair, they were the extremes that I was saying.
That's Well, it is fair to be extreme, I suppose. Let's just take a look at what's going on with the economy, and people are going to say what they're going to say about, you know, whether they're on team blue or team red or another team jersey. We're dealing with a high degree of uncertainty right now, as well as the apparent certainty the tariffs may be here to stay. And we know the impacts of tariffs. They are a tax that has to be paid by the importing company. They decide how much or whether to eat all of that added cost and to pass along, if they are so predisposed, some of that to their consumers. That is what a tariff is. They can have a variety of impacts. They can raise prices. They can slow growth. And then we're in a trade war. So, you know, we've heard the stories about, for example, American bourbon being pulled off the shelves of Canadian stores. We've seen the retaliation where electricity prices coming from Canada are being raised. And we know that we'll be paying more for Canadian energy in the form of gasoline and other petroleum products. Those are the realities. People will ascribe negative or positive characteristics to the political leadership, no matter who's in office. That's not really my job. Mm-hmm. My job is to try to monitor the economic and financial impacts. And we know that the number one economic issue that was identified by Americans in the presidential campaign was inflation. This is not going to help inflation. It may well inflame inflation, and we may well see a slowdown in growth. And so that those are the things that we're looking at, and obviously we're seeing significant declines in the stock market.
So when it comes to the long game here, somebody talked about repaying national debt. I understood yesterday somebody told me that an expert, an economist at the Cato Institute, that the largest expense the country has is on, I think it's $36.5 trillion of national debt that we have. that supersedes Social Security and the other entitlement programs. Social Security is considered an entitlement program. Those of you that are getting ready to text in, because most people draw far more out than they put in. I'm just saying. But let me fix that also, Mark, before I get text, because if you had been allowed to invest your money without having it go into Social Security, then maybe that wouldn't happen. But that's not the case. Anyway, let's keep moving. With that being said, what is this going to do? I guess all I want people to be aware of is, okay, if you want to have some economic pain, that's fine if you are accomplishing something. But if we continue to increase the debt and there is economic pain, then are we really accomplishing anything? Is that too much of a question?
Well, no. I'll just come straight at the last part, and that is the math doesn't add up.
Okay.
So we know that, you know, we had a commercial earlier talking about the continuation of the Trump tax cuts. The bill that they're looking at would add $4 trillion to the debt. $4 trillion. You know, you're not going to do that by nickel and diming the National Forest Service. I mean, that's just the reality. In terms of Social Security, you're right. We have an aging population, but the system has always been one, essentially, where younger cohorts, younger Americans who are in the workforce are essentially funding the program so that, you know, the people who are beginning to draw their benefits can be paid what essentially they were promised, and also, by the way, what they paid into the program. And so you're right, things like the national debt, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, as well as national defense, those are all the largest components of essentially what the current expenditures are. And the debt is the interest that has to be paid on the debt right now. And we've had for years now, members of both parties, neither party is wholly on this, have been adding to the debt by, you know, spending money without imposing taxes. That's just been the opposite of fiscal responsibility. And we live in this world where, you know, two people fire a gun and at the same time, and one accuses the other of firing the first shot, where actually both are guilty. But, you know, because we live in this world where people decide their own alternative realities and facts, they don't observe the fact that, yes, both parties have contributed to the problem that we have right now.
And as you say, team red or blue, to be clear, I'm on team green. I'm just looking out for my best economic interest here. And I think, you know, everybody has to, in a way, because ultimately you have to try to take care of your family. Somebody texted in that he's legitimately Trump trying to reduce the trillions of debt. Well, not really. That's why I wanted to bring up that this adds $4 trillion to the debt, so you can spin it however you want, but you got to look at the bottom line on all of this and whether or not we're decreasing the debt. Now, I'm sure politically one party spins it one way. Well, yeah, we're doing this for that. The other party spins it the other way. But ultimately, you have to look at the bottom line and see what's actually happening behind all the misdirection. We'll pick it up here. We come back. Mark Hamrick, Bankrate Senior Industry Economic Analyst. Right now, 622 Traffic, WWL. 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Mark Hamrick, our guest, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. He was originally going to come on and talk about the economy, adding 151,000 jobs last month, unemployment rate rising to 4.1%. But after what happened on Wall Street yesterday, I kind of called an audible. What did you want to say about the jobs that were added and the unemployment rate, Mark?
Feels like old news, not in the sense that it was Friday, but in the sense, Tommy, that these surveys are conducted around the 12th of the previous month. Mm-hmm. And we know, for example, from Challenger Gray and Christmas, the Chicago-based outplacement firm that tracks these things, that we had the largest number of job cut announcements last month since the early days of the pandemic, and that 62,000 of those as of February were in the federal government. So in the jobs report that we got on Friday, we saw the decline of 10,000 federal jobs. So that wave has yet to hit the shore, so to speak, in the measurement of it. And I think that we'll probably see a rising unemployment rate in the coming months, probably see slowing hiring, and that's why people believe that recession risks are rising. Doesn't mean we're nearing a recession at the moment, but the risks are clearly rising.
All right, so along those lines, somebody texted me years and years ago and said, Tommy, why does President Obama say so much and pause so much. And I said, well, because at that time I told him, because, you know, what a president says, his words matter, and presidents generally parse their words very carefully. President Trump has been known to be a free speaker. And the reason I bring this up, Mark, is that I'm not trying to criticize him, but he did say he wouldn't rule out a recession. And I just wonder what kind of words, what kind of weight those words carry. Because, again, President Trump has been known to say a lot of stuff. But when he said he wouldn't rule out a recession, did this seem to get the attention of traders on Wall Street? What part did any of that play in this, on your, in your opinion?
That's a difficult one to parse, right? Because if we were having a conversation before this or a year ago, I would say that we should always anticipate the risk of a recession at some point, because that is an inherent part of the economic cycle. Either we go through expansions or contractions slash recessions. We go through bull markets, bear markets. We hope that the negative consequences are outweighed by the positive ones. I think perhaps what bothered people here is, in the past, Trump was seen as being hypersensitive to the performance of the stock market. I don't ever recall a president who would have appeared agnostic to the notion of a recession or an economic downturn, but between his speech to the joint session of Congress and what I understand that he said in the interview, is he's almost saying, you know, it's inevitable and there's not much that can be done about it. And I think that probably caught people off guard.
What do you think happens today and next couple of weeks in the market? Just out of curiosity, I'm wondering.
Tommy, I've done this long enough to know that I should not be making short-term predictions about the market, but I can say the stock futures are pointing toward a positive open in the early going this morning.
So not heading toward a bear market at all?
Well, I wouldn't. I do not predict those kinds of things.
All right.
I don't go down that road.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark Hamrick, BankRig Senior Economic Analyst. We'll talk to Jacques Thibodeau, Director of the Governor's Office of Emergency Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness, GOSEP, when we come back. Time now, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7. Man, I forgot to mention the St. Patrick's Parade in the Irish Channel on Saturday. And that's really dumb because I marched in that parade for like 15 years, although, to be honest, I don't remember a lot of it because there was some drinking going on. Anyway, so let's hope that can get in with the weather that's coming through. It's supposed to be nice until Saturday, and then Peyton said it all depends on the timing, so we'll have to see. Let's hope everything gets in. Meanwhile, beautiful spring day today. Jacques Thibodeau joins us now. Colonel Thibodeau, Director of the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness, or GOSEP. How you doing, Colonel?
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
I'm all right. So let's talk about this homeless shelter, because I took a note here from something I saw last week, and maybe I wrote it down incorrectly, because sometimes I can't read my own handwriting. You ever had that happen to you?
It happens quite a bit. The older we get, it seems to happen more.
Makes me think I should have been a doctor. The handwriting goes bad, and the eyes go bad, too. So it's like, anyway, did I see that the homeless shelter cost $19 million that housed 180 people for 2 months? And if I did the math on that, it comes out to like $105,000 per person. It seems like you could have bought them a house for that. Am I missing something or what?
Well, the first thing of it is it's called a transition center. And what's different is there's a difference between sheltering and housing. This was to provide a stable environment while we were in the Super Bowl and Mardi Gras aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And it comes in the form of state dollars. But the good news is that we're also applying for federal reimbursement, and all of our conversations with the federal government look favorable that they will reimburse us for those costs.
But for the average person like me, because I consider myself average, Colonel, $105,000 a person, that seems like a lot, no?
Well, it comes down to what the strategy was. What we wanted to do is we wanted to have a dialogue about a long-term strategy in the city of New Orleans for homeless. So what we did was we went into this with the Louisiana Housing Corporation and Office of Community Development with a complete wraparound transition center. We had medical, we had case management, we had mental health, we had professionals there, we had security. So we ran a complete center that was almost in effect like a hospital center that you would not normally see at a low barrier shelter at one of the other nonprofit shelters. So we wanted to do this from a standpoint of showing as a state that you can, in a short-term aspect, use federal dollars to improve the safety of the homeless people. It is it does appear on the surface that when you look at it, $17 to $19 million does appear on the surface as an extensive amount of money, but these federal dollars are made specifically for these purposes and has to be spent in this fashion.
But okay, then again, we talk about federal spending and debt and deficit. I'm not trying to get you, that's not your wheelhouse. That's not what you're in. But somebody ultimately has to pay for this, right? I mean, that's the federal government that's spending the money?
Absolutely. And so our deal, at the largest amount, we had 183 people there. What has happened is 49 of those people have been transitioned and have keys or leases to an apartment with another 47 in the pipeline that we have taken now off of the streets in a homeless fashion, and they now have a lease for a new apartment or actually have keys. So over 90 people of that 183 have either already been placed in a permanent house or are in the process of doing so.
Let's talk about the future then. What happens from here on in? Because that was for Super Bowl Mardi Gras. Is this a new model going forward to deal with the homeless situation, A, in New Orleans, and B, could it be used statewide?
Well, what we're hoping for is we're hoping that this becomes a model on a nationwide aspect. So the contract for the center actually ends today. So yesterday, we knew that we were not just going to end in the Mardi Gras shelter or in the transition center after Mardi Gras. So on Monday of last week, we had 111 people in the shelter. And then on Monday, we had 78 yesterday. So we're going to extend the contract a week at a time, and we're going to divert the money from all of the wraparound services to case management to try to place these people in a proper home and give them a more permanent aspect. So from the standpoint, it ends today, but we're going to extend it a week at a time, and by April 1st, we anticipate the shelter will be completely closed.
I think, you know, from the get-go, I thought this was a good idea, and it seemed like a good way to handle this, but the only question I had is that the cost of it and why it costs so much. And to go back to that, Colonel, a little bit, you said the federal government says the money has to be spent this way, or I'm confused with how you determined how.
Right. So this money that we have is federal dollars that come through the Louisiana Housing Corporation that are designed. You have certain amount of dollars are for case management. You have certain amount of dollars that are for wraparound type services. So we had an opportunity in going through this. It initially came out after the terrorist attack. Mm-hmm. We knew that we needed to make the ingress and egress safer, but we had an opportunity to prompt a dialogue that was more long-term on how to use federal money in a state application and show that you can do a transition center and show that you can transition people off of the streets into more permanent housing. So a lot of this, the money is restricted to be spent a certain way.
So unless my math is off, we'll take a break here, pick it up, we come back. It still seems to be $105,000 per person moving forward. Is that what it's going to cost to get a homeless person off the streets and into temporary housing? We'll talk about that, as well as I know FEMA wants to talk to you all about ways to make, I saw the story today about ways to make the process more effective when FEMA gives the state money to hand out. And they've asked you to consult on that. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. Six fifty-six, four till seven. Back with Colonel Jacques Thibodeau, Director of the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness, talking about the transition center on Gentilly Road, I think it is. So, Colonel, somebody texted in about more homeless encampments popping up on Calliope near St. Charles by the Pontchartrain Expressway. I think that's what they're talking about near Calliope. Are there any plans for more sweeps? And if so, is there any way to get that price down from the $105,000 per person, unless my math is wrong, that it came out to be for the people, the money that was spent and the people that are in the facility?
Yes, there is a way to get the price down. It comes with, we ran basically a full service transition center. So if you reduce the wraparound services and you go with some of the local services that would apply for mental health counseling and for case management through some of those nonprofit agencies, you can get that price down. We just felt we had an opportunity to start a dialogue on the national level on how you can do this around events and then how it can turn into a long-term solution. So the thing that I will tell you the most important piece is all disasters and all emergency events start at the local level, mm-hmm. and they end at the local level. So just as we started this today, the state's in it for the long haul with New Orleans. We'll partner with them, and we hope that this can start some dialogue and across the entire process.
So I see the story here at NOLA.com. Trump administration wants to overhaul FEMA. It's asking Louisiana for advice, and they've asked you to be a part of that, right? Tell me what it is that you would advise the Trump administration to do as it relates to FEMA, because when it comes to federal spending, Louisiana can't afford to take care of itself when it comes to some kind of disaster, can we?
No, what we will tell you is the GOSEP budget is about $3 billion with a B per year. $2.7 billion of that is FEMA money that routes through GOSEP. We're the agent for FEMA. So when you're talking about this, I think it comes down to FEMA getting back to the roots. The FEMA director used to answer directly to the president. Now it's embedded in the Department of Homeland Security, and that was a major mistake. I worked directly for the governor. And if I was embedded three or four levels down, there would be so much bureaucracy. I think FEMA's got to get back to their roots of doing long-term recovery and leave the prepare and respond to the states.
But fund it.
But fund it, right, yeah. Absolutely. The long-term recovery aspect is the funding piece. And that's what I think President Trump and the administration is trying to go to, is saying the states can do it. And we will fund it. And I think we've demonstrated that from the day of the terrorist attack all the way through Mardi Gras. It's about $45 million that the state has spent, and we did it. We did it without the federal government's help. And right now, there are.
But to be fair, you say without the federal government's help. It was the federal government's money, right?
Yes, it was. And I should say, that's kind of an incorrect statement. The federal government was here, but the federal government, we identified gaps in their ability to respond, to prepare and respond. So we stepped in as a state and as a Orleans Parish and as a city to basically take control of this. And now the federal government, we believe, has a responsibility to pay for that. We began the discussions with the federal government, and they look favorable that they will fund all actions from the terrorist attack through Mardi Gras.
Thank you, Colonel. All right, 7:14 now. Sun's coming up, which is good because, you know, would have been up last week by this point. But what are you going to do? Just get over daylight saving time, I guess. Weather, let's talk about that. Beautiful spring day today, all through the week, except for Saturday when you got the St. Patrick's Day parades kicking off, and then maybe a chance for showers in the afternoon. It could be severe, but they'll watch it and let you know. Then Sunday, and from then on, looks pretty good. Mike Cooper joins us now. Coop, president of St. Tammany Parish. How you doing, Mike?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great this early morning.
You guys got St. Patrick's Day out the way last week, didn't you? Or are there more activities in St. Tammany Parish?
Well, let's see. On Saturday there was St. Patrick's Day, the 50th anniversary, St. Patrick's Day in Old Town Slidell.
Shia LaBeouf was there.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I don't know how he found his way to St. Tammany Parish in Slidell. But we were happy to host him.
There you go. And what? Well, you got some more celebrations? I didn't mean to catch you off the guard.
Yeah, Mardi Paws was on Sunday as well. Mm-hmm. that's the Pooch Parade in downtown Covington. This coming weekend, this Saturday, is Crew de Pooch on the Mandeville Lakefront, another puppy dog parade. And just lots going on these upcoming weekends, and we certainly hope the weather holds out for us.
Let's talk about what's coming up on a ballot for St. Tammany Parish, Mike.
Okay, so a major issue for us here in St. Tammany is funding our major infrastructure projects and our criminal justice system, our public safety agencies. And we've heard our citizens say long enough that we pay enough in taxes, we want you to live within our means. So we're asking our citizens to rededicate an existing 2-cent sales tax, rededicate the use of, and extend the term for another 25 years so that we can provide long-term infrastructure improvements through bond issues and also fund our critical needs in our criminal justice system. We have an obligation to do so, and we do not have sustainable funding for that. So this is a win-win situation in which we can utilize existing sales taxes to fund more services.
Mike, when you talk about rededicating and people expecting you to, you know, live within your means, and I understand that, but I also understand that the population of St. Tammany Parish has exploded and that inflation has affected all of us. So is that, although this is not a new tax, this is just a renewal, correct?
Yes, it will be a renewal of an existing 2-cent sales tax that's paid by those who shop in the unincorporated areas of St. Tammany, not only our own citizens, but those like you and your friends who come to St. Tammany Parish and buy gas, buy tickets to events, eat in our restaurants, and do so many things here in St. Tammany. So the tax burden is shifted to those who actually shop in St. Tammany, not those who just live here. So it's an existing 2-cent sales tax, and as our parish grows, there are more demands. There are more demands on our parish, on our services. So as we continue to increase the sales tax revenue, we also have increased demands. So this is a plan that has been vetted by our bonding professionals, our financial advisors, and is supported by all 14 parish council members, the parish president, the district attorney, our judges, Sheriff Randy Smith, and it's a unified effort to support this so that we need not ask for additional taxes, but live within the 2-cent sales tax that we're collecting now.
You talk about critical needs in a criminal justice system. What are you talking about there, Mike, specifically?
Well, we have obligations through state law to fund certain aspects of the district attorney's office, the judges, and our justice center. We own the justice center in downtown Covington, and we have obligations to maintain that. So we do not have a sustainable revenue to do so. We have a general fund that's funded by our property taxes, but in order to properly fund the district attorney's office, the judges, maintain our justice center, and support our requirements for the sheriff, we've got to have a sustainable revenue, and this will provide us to do so. The general fund does not adequately provide the needs for these offices.
Let me take a break because I'm a little bit confused. I thought that they had tried to raise money for the criminal justice system before, and is this a way to renew something that's already there and then fund the criminal justice system that way? We'll talk about that when we come back. I hate to say workaround because it implies, or it could be pejorative and implies that something is amiss, and nothing's amiss. You're just trying to fund the criminal justice system is what you're trying to do. Mike Cooper is our guest, president of St. Tammany Parish. If you got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Oconor Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 7:24 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Coop, Mike Cooper, president of St. Tammany Parish, about a thing that's going to be on a ballot March 29th that would rededicate sales tax paid. The people who get to vote on this are an unincorporated St. Tammany Parish. Correct me if I'm wrong, Cooper, and the only people that would pay it are people that buy things in unincorporated St. Tammany Parish. Accurate?
That's correct.
Okay.
When the sales tax district was established back in 1986, it was formed for the purpose of funding infrastructure projects in the unincorporated areas of St. Tammany, because the municipalities have their own taxes to provide their own funds, to provide their own projects within their jurisdictions.
I'm looking at a story here by Bob Warren from NOLA.com. A quote you is saying, it's not like the first four attempts. Saying that when voters are hearing from the DA, from the judges, I think that lends credibility. Let's talk about the previous attempts to fund the criminal justice system. And let me read this text, Mike, and you can weigh in on this as well, all right? It says, the courthouse looks lovely, very well maintained, and I see no shortage of police officers on the streets. When people hear, let's take money from roads and infrastructure and give it to criminal justice, that sounds like let the roads crumble and build more jails. Sometimes what you see is not necessarily the truth, and when you assume, we all know what happens. So talk about all of that, if you would, please.
Okay, that's a lot, yeah. But it's a valid concern if you do not know all of the facts. This does not fund police officers or the sheriff's department, the patrol on the streets. The Justice Center does may look nice from the outside, but we have needs to maintain the equipment, the chillers, the all of the units, the security here in the Justice Center. The needs are here, and it's a different alliteration of the previous sales tax or the previous sales tax request to increase or ask for an additional tax, whereas this is utilizing an existing tax. And by extending the term for another 25 years, it was extended back in 2006 from the original, or 2005 from the original 25-year proposition. So by extending it, it will allow us to bond out impactful long-term infrastructure projects, new east-west corridors, widening some of the local roads that are beyond their capacity at this time. So it's while we're providing for the criminal justice system, which is critical, we're also adding capacity to build new roads, improve the infrastructure that we have, replace bridges with bond issues. And we already have a list of possible projects for the first $50 million bond issue.
Mike, can you hang on one second? Because I see here that Colin Sims is on hold, and he wants to join us to talk about simplifying all of this, because I think everybody's on the same page on this, right, Mike?
Yes, we are. Yes,
with that,
we are.
We welcome in Colin Sims. Hey, Colin, how you doing?
Good morning.
Great. How you doing this morning?
I'm all right, sir. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
No, President Cooper did an unbelievable job. We've gotten some good feedback from some homeowners association groups, and getting the feedback, it's kind of simplifying it like this. St. Tammany has a restructuring problem with taxes. And you have all these taxes, these dedicated funds that were passed at a moment in time in a vacuum. And with our growth, these fund balances and these funds have increased. The roads, bridges, and drainage tax is one that has tripled over 10 years. And you're talking about rededicating up to 17% of it, not to exceed 17%, so that the money can be used for its traditional purposes. All we're talking about doing is having sustainable funding to maintain the status quo. If this doesn't happen, like President Cooper said, there's not a renewal, there's not a ongoing, regular, reoccurring source of money to maintain what we have today. Not looking for more money, not looking to increase the DA's budgets, not looking to increase the judges' budgets, but you're talking about potential 55% cuts to our current level of funding if this doesn't happen.
Let me sum it up this way, gentlemen, and you can tell me if I'm right or not. It seems to me if you put a tax on a ballot that goes to infinity, then you're the devil, but yet, when the tax rolls off or is set to roll off, if you try to get it renewed, even though the needs are the same or have increased, then you're the devil as well. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
What's that? No, but you understand what I'm saying, Colin. It's like
we should not have an obligation, a moral obligation, not just a legal obligation, to fund our criminal justice system, our public safety agencies. That's a continuous need, and we need sustainable funding for that. And it should not be something that rolls off, and has the vote of the people every 10 years, 20 years, to see if we want to keep our community safe.
Hard to have it both ways.
Community, we want to keep it this way.
Gentlemen, y'all have a good day. Maybe you can come back again, maybe the week before the election or something, and we'll talk about it again. All right.
We will. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank
Seems like it's very important to St. Tammany Parish, and I'd like to, and we have a lot of people that listen here, so I'd like to direct some attention to it. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Clancy Dubose about the mayoral election, how that's shaping up in New Orleans right now. Time for WWL First News. 7:43, 17 till 8, beautiful spring day ahead. Nice week, actually, until Saturday. Then we'll have to watch the weather with all the St. Patrick's Day parade activities going on. Clancy Dubose joins us now, our friend, WWL Louisiana political analyst, to talk about the mayoral race coming up in New Orleans. How you doing, Clancy?
I'm well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. So are you enjoying your semi-retirement, I guess?
I am, very much.
Good for you. Let's talk about the mayor's race. And I was kidding around the other day saying it's not April Fool's Day. Tyrell Morris is really running for mayor because it seems like the kind of thing that would be an April Fool's joke. However, when it comes to New Orleans politics, who knows? Tell me who's in so far and your thoughts on how this is likely to shape up.
Well, you know, I don't like to make predictions, but I think the safest prediction is that we will see a large field. Whenever there's an open race for mayor, and by open I mean no incumbent running or eligible to run, which is the case this time because Mayor Cantrell is term limited. So we always see a large field. I would not be surprised to see double digits of candidates, not all of them major, and certainly not all of them well-funded. But, you know, first out of the gate to announce was Helena Moreno. That was no surprise. And she's very well-financed already and well-known. And I suspect if a poll were taken today, she would be in first place. That's not a prediction. It's just the way things look right now. We all have to remember that a poll is just like a photograph. It's a snapshot in time. If I took a picture of you right now, it would show exactly what you look like. A week from now, you might be wearing something different. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be in a different location, so things would change. Same thing with polls. Tyrell Morris, as you mentioned, has announced. Arthur Hunter is expected to run. I think he did announce.
He did.
He did, yes. Yeah. So he's a former judge at Criminal District Court, a very highly respected judge. He does not have nearly the funds that on hand that Helena Moreno has, but there's plenty of time. You know, a serious African-American candidate in a city that is majority African-American is going to be taken very seriously. Waiting in the wings right now is council member from District E, Oliver Thomas, who is widely thought to be a candidate for mayor. He certainly has talked about it. He hasn't talked about it publicly, but in private conversations with potential donors and supporters, he has suggested very strongly, or even said that he wants to run or intends to run, but he has not yet announced. He does, you know, because he's well known, he can wait. He can, you know, this is obviously a very serious decision, especially at this point in his life. He is, I think, close to me in age. I'm 70. I don't think Oliver's 70 yet, but he's certainly in his mid to late 60s. And this is his last shot, let's say, if he's going to run for mayor. So he can afford to wait a little bit, but he can't afford to wait too long because, you know, as they say, the smart money, the people who tend to give to politicians running for an office like mayor, like to see a little predictability. And, you know, but Oliver's got options. He can run for re-election from District E. He can run at large. There's an open seat at large now with Moreno running for mayor. Joe Geruso from District A was expected to run for that, but he announced he's not running for anything. He's got a pair of beautiful young daughters who are about to go to college, and he's got to pay for that. So he's going to go back to work. He's going back to work in the private sector. And, you know, there are potentially other candidates who might run. Anyone from the legislative delegation, business community, civic leadership, and people that we don't even know. There are some perennial candidates like Nooney Man and others who might run. So, you know, we're going to wait and see how this field shapes up. Qualifying is, I believe, in July or August. I think it's August. The race, the primary is in October with a runoff if needed, and probably will be in November.
Yeah, I'm showing my age here, but who is the guy who would run and always say bring gorillas to Audubon Park? Who is that?
Oh, that was in the old days.
Rodney somebody?
Rodney Fertel.
That's who it was. Yes, exactly. So, look, when you talk about smart money and when you talk about Helena Moreno being well-financed, who do you have to have in your corner if you want to be mayor of New Orleans?
Well, you have to have a lot of people. Mm-hmm. First of all, the voters. But if you're talking about strategy,
I'm talking about money.
Money?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are hundreds, if not several thousand, people who would donate to campaigns. Mm-hmm. There's probably a couple of hundred who donate on a significant level. You know, lawyers, contractors, architects, engineers, you know, consultants, and just business people. You know, a lot of developers. A lot of people who either have to do want to do business with the city as vendors, or people who are regulated by the city or interface with the city, you know, they want to have access to a mayor. And there are people who are just civic-minded, people who just some people like, you know, was we in the game call it the game of politics. Mm-hmm. They just like doing it. They don't need anything. They don't want anything, but they have money, and they like to support people, and there are people who are civic-minded who have money and just want to help people they think are good people. So, you know, there are lots of reasons why people give.
I guess the way I should have asked it, Clancy, is there a group of king or queen makers that any candidate really has to court and have on their side?
There are people who think they are king makers, but I think in New Orleans our politics are diverse enough. There is no one group. I mean, you want the business community with you, because mm-hmm. that's the driver of our economy, the hospitality industry, the people. Jay LaPere was a big businessman. He lives uptown. His business is just over the Parish Line in Jefferson. Latrim, an internationally known business. Look at the Business Council of New Orleans. That's an A list of potential donors, and there are others as well. I don't mean to single out Mr. LaPere, but his name comes to mind because he and a few others play pretty significantly. Boise Bollinger is one who's known to give. People at that level, they give for a lot of reasons. LaPere and Bollinger don't really do business with the city, but they care about the city, mm-hmm. so sometimes they give. And there are dozens of people like them. I use them just as exemplars of people who are, you know, very successful in business and who are active in civic life. You got to get a good pollster. You got to get a good researcher. You know, you got to put together a really A-list of advisors and consultants as well. That's just as important as getting the right amount of money.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Somebody jokingly texted in Scrim for mayor. I'll say this. He couldn't be any more absent than the current mayor is. When we come back, we'll talk about what it is that maybe the election could turn on, because the bar is very, very low when it comes to the incumbent mayor. What are the issues? What is it going to be that gets somebody elected in the city hall? 751, talking to Clancy Dubose about the mayoral election in Orleans Parish. 9 till 7, till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, 4 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Clancy Dubose, our friend, WWL Louisiana political analyst, talking about the mayoral race for New Orleans. And Clancy, I think it's obvious that the bar is pretty low when it comes to the incumbent. And I'm just wondering, at the street level, what's going to get the next mayor elected? And is that consistent or inconsistent with moving the city forward?
I believe they're looking for someone. Every election is a unique event. Mm-hmm. But they all share a few things in common. And this election reminds me of the election at the tail end of Ray Nagin's tenure, when nothing was getting done, right? Mm-hmm. They wanted somebody who was competent, someone who knew how to be mayor, who was going to restore basic city services. And in fact, so you said the bar is low. I would disagree. I think the bar is higher than normal, because we really need something. The city is at a tipping point. Mm. We have to get basic services restored. In fact, there's a coalition called the City Services Coalition. It's nonpartisan, broad-based. did a deep dive among voters with polling, with research, with focus groups, and they went out and they asked citizens, thousands of citizens, what do you want? What is the most important thing to you? What's your biggest problem with New Orleans? And, you know, what do you love about the city? And they identified five areas: infrastructure, crime, trash pickup. I don't have them all. I'm committed to memory, but there's, you can go online. I think it's called cityservicescoalition.org. And I think there's an article in today's paper. If not, I know it's in NOLA.com. Mm-hmm. This group is very serious. They hired Ron Fauché as their pollster. It's got people like Press Kabakoff and Assessor Errol Williams. And they're talking about restructuring city government, not in a radical way, keeping the mayor council form, but giving the CAO, the chief administrative officer, who was envisioned in our original 54 charter as a strong manager of the city, but it hasn't worked out that way. So they're going to strengthen and add more transparency and add more accountability, which is the real missing ingredient. So they want a mayor who's going to be transparent, accountable, and who's willing to try things differently, but who's also competent, who we look for a mayor who's kind of Superman, a Superwoman, mm-hmm. or Wonder Woman, and there is no such person. A good mayor, and I think Mitch Landrieu and Mark Morial were good mayors, as was Dutch and Moon and Sidney. They surround themselves with good people who know how to get things done, and the mayor just sort of oversees them and looks at his or her team to get things done, and that's what's missing right now. So they put a blueprint out there, and they're asking candidates for mayor and the council to commit to something like this. It's going to require charter changes. It's going to require changes in the city and state law. They're talking about potentially bringing the Sewage and Water Board in as a city department, changing some of the civil service rules. I mean, they really need to have accountability, and it has to start with...
Thank you, Clancy. 8:16, nice spring day today, nice spring week up until Saturday, then a chance for some severe weather, but... who knows about the timing of it? Too far out to tell whether it's going to affect St. Patrick's Day parades or not. We'll have everything you need to know here on WWL as soon as we know it, but it's just too early now. Keith Hinckley joins us now, our friend, president of Plaquemines Parish. How you doing, Keith?
I'm good, Tommy. How about you?
I'm okay. You know, after being seeing a traffic for years with the Venture Global LNG facility, finally. Friday, I took a ride down to see it, and I got to tell you, I've tried like three or four times before, only to say, screw this, I'm not going as far, and turn it around. But I did finally make it all the way down on Friday. When you got parking lots that go deep into the alphabet, that's a big facility.
It's huge. It's a very big facility. Yeah.
So tell me about the expansion that was announced, and does that change anything for Plaquemines Parish, at least in the future with the traffic and so forth, and then we'll get to the bigger concerns. Because, you know, you start at my house, Keith, and then you work out, right? That's the way it works.
Well, that's how it works with all of us. Yeah. I mean, that's where our work begins, you know. It was just kind of a good, scary kind of an announcement that was made last Thursday when they're talking about an $18 billion expansion to the existing facility. It's phase three of the Plaquemines LNG. So yeah, I've got some meetings here in the next couple of days on Thursday with some of the gentlemen from Venture Global, just to kind of get a good timeline as to what the next process is going to be. And from what I understand, Tommy, this first, the main plant that was built, if you notice, they had those four huge big tanks out on the facility. Well, they're not going to be doing any more of those on this phase three. It's the processing side. They will use those existing tanks to distribute their product. Now they will be building some new berths out on the river. Mm-hmm. So we kind of feel, and just talking with them in the brief moments that I've had the time to talk with Venture Global, the workforce, it won't be as large as it was when this facility was first being built.
Let me ask it a different way then. I was under the impression, because I know they had cut back on some people because phase two was wrapping up, But yeah. Now that we have phase three, it's accurate to say they're going to be ramping up again, Keith?
Now, look, this isn't going to happen. This is like they're just in the beginning phases of their FERC process.
Okay.
We're looking at...
You have a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission when you say FERC?
That's okay. It, Tommy. Okay. Correct, yeah. And that's the whole process that they've got to go through, which gives us an opportunity. We have never been so close to the Peters Bypass Road bridge and road extension than we've ever been before. We've had, Senator Kennedy, we've had so many congressmen come into this parish in the last year and a half. We had the two secretaries of Energy and Interior, Secretary Wright and Secretary Burgum. So they're seeing the value of Plaquemines Parish in southeast Louisiana. So going back to the bypass road, it's on the governor's radar. It's we've got Senator Connick, who's the chairman of the Transportation Committee, Rep. Bro, who is on the Joint Transportation Committee up in Baton Rouge. So the bridge and the bypass, the Peters Bypass Road, that is huge. That's major. This gives us an opportunity to start ramping that up and get a little closer to making that come to fruition, too.
The Peters Road Bypass Bridge would cross what and where?
I don't know if you know where New Orleans Iron Works is, where the landfill. It will be where the old Walker Road entrance is off of 23, which is south of the Naval Air Station.
Okay.
And south of Chevron as well.
I got you.
So when we get that bypass road built, that'll alleviate a lot of the traffic that comes in through Bell Chase proper.
So that road would then go from 23 to...
Eventually it would go all the way to the future corridor, the I-49, to the West Bank Expressway.
Wow.
Yes.
So...
And that's something that we've been talking, Tommy. I'm sure you've talked to Billy in the past and previous parish presidents. Mm-hmm. This is something that goes back to when I was on the council from 07 to 2014. We were in conversations with this road.
So this would include another bridge across the Mississippi River or across the canal?
Another bridge. No, not across the Mississippi, across the Industrial Canal.
Industrial Canal, yeah. So
are
we talking about a toll situation there or not?
It would be a toll situation. It would be because... you got Plenary right there where they had the first right of refusal, and just talking with the governor on Thursday, he even alluded to that. And then I had to tell him, the governor, look, in all of my town halls that I've had in the last 2 years, and it's been asked of me, would it be a toll? And I've had to say it will be a toll because of the contract that the previous state administration signed with Plenary.
Yeah, let me take a break, and we'll pick it up there when we come back. Because, Keith, and I live in Bell Chase, but yes. The toll thing to me is more palatable if that is the is what Sean Wilson said. I talked to him at a town hall meeting years ago when they were just, this was on a drawing board. If this is going to be the future going forward, it's going to be private-public partnerships for every bridge that's built in the state. Okay. But if it's just Plaquemines, then it's not so okay. We'll talk about that in your conversations with the governor. Also, what's going on at the corner of Woodland Highway and Bell Chase Highway? Because they're clearing a lot of ground there. I don't know what they're building, but maybe you can tell me. 822, y'all got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. We'll also talk about the Hell on Wheels tunnel that they're trying to build. Traffic, WWL. 827, 828, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're all back with Plaquemines Parish President Keith Hinckley talking about the big expansion that they had, announcement of the expansion of the LNG facility. When it comes to the bridge, the Bell Chase Bridge and that nightmare, Keith, do you have any idea where they stand on that, what's happening?
We had a meeting with them, was Friday, Tommy, and we're told on the 16th the bridge should be opening in both directions. And somewhere at the end of the month, tolls will be starting to collect.
End of March?
End of March, yes.
And yeah. So for those, go ahead.
Well, and just let the community know that we're going to get some public service announcements to you and as well as the TV stations to let the community know that when the tolls are going to start be collecting. And at that time, we have, I hate to say demands, but we're highly asking and putting a little pressure on Plenary and the DOTD, when they start collecting these tolls, They cannot be closing down any of the lanes. All four of those lanes have to be functional and being used
and
when they collect the tolls.
I'm sorry, Keith, we're running out of time. There is no toll booth. It's all done electronically. It's so people, how do you get whatever you need to put wherever you need to put it?
Well, they've got some community meetings coming up here in the next go to ppg.gov, and you'll see there's some town halls. There's some meetings that Plenary's going to be doing where you can come in and set up for your go pass.
You have to do that, or can you do it online, or do you know?
You can do it online. I think it's gopass.com. I will send you that information, and we can get that out.
Stick it in a mailbox if you like. That's fine. You know where I live. And look, one other thing, that corner by Woodland Highway and that I asked you about, because I'm getting a lot of texts. People are screaming about Walmart in Belchase. As far as you know, there's no Walmart going in Belchase on that corner?
Absolutely not, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. Anything else, okay. Keith, about Plaquemines, East Bank, anything?
I'm good, as always. Thank you for the opportunity to get our news and express our opinions down here in Plaquemines Parish.
All right, okay. Sir. You bet. Keith Hinckley, you too, President Plaquemines Parish. We'll take a break, come back, talk Saints with Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director right now. Time for WWL First News. 8:43, 17 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, got knocking on a door. Free agency, Saints making some moves. Steve Geller joins us now, WWL Sports Director. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing all right, Tommy. It had a fun week last week in Disney. Glad to be back home, though. The House of Mouse, very expensive, and the food not as tasty.
I saw you on Facebook with the fam there, and I just was going to ask you if you saw the Disney meltdown. And what that is that's where you've been there, and you're sitting there eating, and you watch Dad at the next table, that this trip has cost him more than he had any idea it was going to cost. He could have gone to the real Italy for what it costs to see the plastic Italy in Epcot, but that's okay. And he sits down with his tray of burgers and Cokes, you know, about a $300 tray of burgers and Cokes, and then Johnny complains because he didn't want tomato on his hamburger. And at that point, Dad just freaking loses it. It's the Disney meltdown. It happens often. Did you see one? Or were you perhaps
involved? No, I didn't have the meltdown, thankfully, but I do understand, man, the prices at Disney are outlandish. Had a lot of fun, but like I said, good to be home. The most meltdowns I saw were by the children, at least, not from the parents. But I totally understand it, and I had no idea. Basically, baby carriages this day are as big as Cadillacs.
Yeah. But we'll just look at Mardi Gras. Look at what's happening with Mardi Gras and extended to Disney World. And
right.
The only thing I'll say is that I think everybody should take their kids to Disney once. But if you are doing some price comparisons, and I'm not kidding about this, you can go to the real Hawaii, you can go to the real Ireland, you can go to the real Italy for what it costs you to go to Epcot. But enough of that. Let's talk about the Saints. What moves have the Saints been making, Steve?
Yeah, they've been spending money, too, like they've been at Disney, surprisingly. I guess you could say saving money, doing a bunch of restructures. Guys like Carl Granderson, Cesar Ruiz, Colin Saunders restructured their deals. Over the weekend, we know Derek Carr, the quarterback's deal, got extended, freeing up a bunch of money for the Saints. Guys like Demario Davis, Eric McCoy also in that mix. And right now, the team, according to overthecap.com, a salary cap website, they're estimated to have $13 million in cap space, so no longer in the red for the black and gold. We saw them re-signing Chase Young, the defensive end, yesterday, announced a three-year deal that's $51 million, and with incentives can be worth up to $57 million there. So the team hasn't been hampered that much by these salary cap issues. I feel like we see it every year. They make the maneuvers. This offseason, they got those number crunchers over there that'll just kick the can down the line. I know fans are tired of hearing that and want the team to, you know, get cap, you know, more friendly than they've been. But the Saints find a way to make it work. Just going to see now what they can add now in free agency going forward. I expect not too many big pieces. It's more going to be about what they can acquire through the draft.
Do you have any idea how that whole salary cap restructuring thing works? I'm not kidding about that, because it's you know, you go from, and you're not talking about a dollar and a half here. You're going from $38 million over the cap to $13 million under. How'd that happen? I don't know. but they made it work. So they have $13 million now under the cap. Is that right? Under next year's cap?
Correct.
Okay.
Under this year's cap. So they are cap compliant for tomorrow, which will be which signals the start of the new year, and every team has to be, you know, salary cap compliant by then.
Okay, so they're salary cap compliant. That means as far as restocking or retooling the team, they have, and I don't know what the cap's going to be, or I guess the cap has already been determined. As it stands now, they have $13 million to spend on free agents, and what about the draft and rookie contracts and all of that?
Yeah, that's their number right now. It's like $13.4 million. After being, you know, in the red for so much, that the base cap for this season is estimated to be $279 million, and right now this, you know, like I said, the Saints just under that, and you know, getting additional free agents with just $13 million, not likely unless they want to free up some more money by working with deals like an Alvin Kamara, Taysom Hill. I know there were the rumors about him getting cut. That hasn't happened. He's still a part of the team. Tyrann Mathieu could restructure his deal. And what ends up happening is you extend a player's contract, convert some of that, their salary into bonus money, and even they create those dummy void years. It's all definitely a complicated process that I'd like Saints accountants to be working on my taxes to try and free up some money.
So tell me about Tyrann Mathieu. If I don't know if he's got anything left in the tank or not. I know the last couple of years, every time I doubt that he does, he comes up with a big play. But he did last year appear to be kind of showing his age a little bit. Is he going to be part of this team this year? And if not, how does that affect the cap?
I think Tyrann Mathieu is a guy that we will see part of this team. He's been more than willing to work with the New Orleans Saints about restructuring his contracts to whatever they need. A guy that's, you know, a hometown guy that wants to be part of this team, literally someone you could say bleeds black and gold. It's all about a team first kind of dude. You know, he's got a, looking at his cap number for this year, is base salary of $6.25 million with a cap hit of $11.3. So I could see some restructuring going on for him if they want to free up some more money to dip into the free agency waters. But also, like you mentioned as well, you still, whenever we do have the NFL draft in April, you're going to have to re-sign all the draft picks and the undrafted free agents afterwards. So you're going to need some more cap space than $13 million right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask. That comes out of that $13 million, right? And those,
correct,
we know right now, well, depending on who the Saints draft at what position, but you have an idea how much they're going to have to pay because it's already set, correct? With the collective bargaining agreement?
Like you mentioned, the new CBA, those outlandish contracts for rookies aren't the case anymore. You pretty much know where a guy is going to land after you draft him. It's like all slotted and set out for you now. And then, you know, afterwards, that second contract is the big one for all these guys.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I see we'll talk about some things going on in the NFL with free agency already. And you look at Sam Darnold signing, I think, what, $100 million with the Seahawks. The Saints ain't got that kind of money at all. I also want to talk about the Derek Carr restructuring thing because I think people may be reading more into that than it means. Steve Geller's our guest, WWL Sports Director. You got any questions about the Saints or comments? 504-260-1870. That's the Oakman Heart Jeweler talking text line. I'll pass them along. We come back, 851, 9 till 9. Traffic now, WWL. 8:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about some Saints moves and free agency with our good friend Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. Somebody said the Saints have been, people have been saying the Saints defense is old, so they addressed that by signing a young guy. Get it? Chase Young? Yeah, that's clever. But I tell you what, I did get a couple of questions on, and it's just two words, Cam Jordan. What does all of this mean for him?
He still has not reworked his deal with the Saints currently, so still under his current contract. And curious to see if they end up, you know, going to him to try and free up some money. It would make sense. He's been there, done that before with the team. And we know he's used to how things go with his black and gold squad. And, you know, none of these guys are taking any kind of salary reductions. I think that's a big misconception by folks that are mad at Derek Carr, too, for not taking a pay cut. No one's taking a pay cut. The deals just get reworked. Things convert into signing bonuses. Like I mentioned, too, before, things get pushed, extended, and you get a dummy void year added to a contract. So the guys end up getting more money up front than they would have. But any kind of salary reductions really isn't happening. I don't think that, you know, you see that with many teams in the NFL. Guys are going to get paid what they've negotiated, but are willing to rework stuff. If you want to alter the way I get the money and I get it sooner than later, that's no big problem.
I'm seeing words being used like doubling down on Derek Carr, commitment to Derek Carr. I know there was a lot of social media pushback. What was this? Is this as much of a commitment as it seems, or was this more of a salary cap move? Tell me your thoughts on that and the Saints' commitment to Derek Carr at this point, Steve.
Yeah, it definitely means he is your starting quarterback for this coming season. Whether you like it or not, folks, Derek Carr will be the guy. It's not going to be a Spencer Rattler, a Jake Haener, or some other young guy in the draft that the Saints end up taking. They're committed to Derek Carr. He's now opened up $30.9 million in space for this team by restructuring his deal. $30 million base salary and a $10 million guaranteed roster bonus has pushed, you know, to future years, lowering his cap figure for this year now to $20.4 million. But that does, you know, once again, push things down the line for this Saints team. So Carr's 2026 cap figure looks like $69.2 million right now in the final year of his contract. So come next year around this time, Tommy, we're going to be talking about the same thing once again. What are the Saints going to do about Derek Carr's contract?
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, I guess. but it's going to have to be the draft. I mean, there's no other way, right? They can't restructure to really enough to make any kind, free up enough money to make any kind of moves in free agency, serious moves?
No, the Saints typically haven't made that big splash move in free agency. Right now, it's just going to be about adding some key pieces here and there to the roster, hopefully along offensive and defensive line.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Stay out of Disney World. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member. Maybe that's where LaToya's headed. We'll be back.